this speaker meeting. Tina will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Jeff. Jeffrey will share his experience, strength, and hope. You're on.
Okay, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tina.
And I'm going to sit if everybody can hear me. Otherwise, I'll stand if you can't hear me.
Stand.
Anyway, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict.
Hi, Tina.
And there's a lot of you that I don't know, and there are some that I've known for years, and a few folks that I've known for decades. And it's really nice seeing all the friendly faces. And it's really nice to be sober, standing here today. I'm one of those people that have had a lot of relapses. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 39 years ago, and I was determined that I was going to find out some way that I would be able to drink normally, eventually, and I was convinced that if I kind of found out all the secrets here and got my life in order, you know, like on the outside, like got a better career and got more money and, you know, all that, which I did, but it didn't help me with the alcohol problem. I would get a year, I'd get 2 years. At one point, I had 8 years, and then the last time was 3 weeks shy of 10 years, and I drank. And I've got to say that for me, a big part of my relapsing was thinking that I could take pain medications and pills since they were doctor prescribed, and I had multiple health issues, etc. And I went through a treatment program for pain medication 4 years ago and have not had to take a pain med since. And so I count April 1st, 2011 as my sobriety date. And I am very grateful for that because I have pain, you know. I mean, a lot of us do. I was able to get pain meds very easily because I've got polio and a couple of other health conditions. And, you know, I'd walk into a doctor, oh, you poor thing, you know, whatever you want, you know, what do you want? Yeah, and so it almost killed me, and I know that there are people here in this room that have seen me in my active addiction, and it's real nice, you know, seeing all of us that are here. And I've got about 5 minutes left, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Six.
All right. I'll talk a little bit about just kind of recently, the last year and a half has been probably the most difficult year of my life. I've had a lot of loss. My younger sister died of this disease, and then I lost my brother a year ago, earlier this week. One of my closest friends died of cancer. I lost my cat of 18 years. I moved twice in the last year, and it's just, you know, it's been a lot of stuff. And you know, I know that it's the stuff of life, but, you know, my big fear was that I was going to get so paralyzed by grief that I would just, like, lose it and either go off on the binge of all binges, or go nuts, or do myself in, or some combination of those three things. And I knew I had to stay really close to the program, you know, going through this. And there have been days and weeks that are a blur. And that's just, I mean, I was I was going through the motions, but I wasn't really fully present, and I was completely clean and sober. And I sometimes needed to just call somebody from the program and say, I don't know how I'm going to get through the day. And they'd say, well, you know, you get through it by getting through just today. You know, just go to a meeting and find somebody you can talk to. And fortunately, I've got a sponsor that I've got a great relationship with. And, you know, what I've gotten out of going through that kind of just, you know, pain that I've never experienced before is, A, that I can do it. You know, any of us, you know, can go through difficult situations. B, I know this program really works. And for me, the simpler I keep it, the better it works. It also works a whole lot better for me if I keep my meetings regular and stay close to my my friends in the program, because you guys understand me as the alcoholic addict that I am in ways that, you know, my family members or other people don't and can't, you know, because, you know, we kind of have a journey that we go on here that isn't, you know, completely always aligned with, you know, mainstream life. And what is said here, what is practiced here, really, fortunately, I'm able to hear it and today. And
how much more time?
The rest of the night.
Okay, all right. I just don't want to go off on a tangent and then, like, you know, stop in the middle of a sentence. But you know, with all of all the different things that I've tried and gimmicks that I've tried to, like, somehow get away with, you know, somehow being able to, you know, do things that are not, well, like it says in How It Works, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I'm one of those people that, you know, for me, it works only if I'm doing it thoroughly. I'm too much of an alcoholic and drug addict. I came from two alcoholic parents. I was alcoholic from the first time I picked up a drink, you know, and it was the same thing with drugs. So, you know, I belong here. I'm really happy I'm here. I mean, I really mean that. AA is my life, and I have something that I can live by. And when it gets real scary and dark, there's still a place that I can go to, you know, a place in my head that I can go to that's safe, you know, a place where I can surrender and know it's going to be okay no matter what, as long as I don't pick up. So that's it, and
great.
Thank you.
I'd like to turn the meeting over to Jeffrey.
My name's Jeffrey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeffrey.
So I'm going to stand. I'm going to come around the front of the table. All right. Wow. I haven't talked in front of a room this big in a while. You know, I was coming over here. I was running a little late. My GPS on my phone is not working so well. It's kind of like coming apart, my phone. And so it doesn't work very well, so it directed me, like, way farther, and I don't really know this area well. Thank you, Tina. It was great. I love Tina. Tina's been a great friend to me in the program. I've only known her for the couple years that I've been here in the East Bay area. She's great. She's solid. And I heard a lot of the same stuff that I have in her share. Let's see. 50 years old. My sobriety date is June 29th, 2009. So I just celebrated 6 years. I kind of have a sponsor that I'm not really in great touch with. She moved to Florida, and I haven't really been in good touch with her. I need a new sponsor. That's rough, though. I've had that same sponsor for almost the whole time. So it's difficult. You know, I want to find somebody that I can tell everything to. And one of the more difficult things for me to talk about is my sexual preference. I'm, or my lack thereof. I'm bisexual. And I mention that because it's very uncomfortable for me, and that's a lot of what I drink over. I guess I'll go through a little bit about the, you know, what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now, the kind of typical format for me. I wasn't born an alcoholic, and I'm the only alcoholic in my family. My family is full of, like, moderate drinkers who have, like, half a beer and leave it. You guys witness this phenomenon? Like, the cocktail glass, the ice melts in it. The martini gets, like, warm, and they have to re-chill it. That is not me. I'm not that guy. I didn't start off drinking, like, super heavy, but I did join the Navy when I was 21, and the Navy taught me how to drink. You know, I started kind of my two separate lives when I was in the Navy, because I spent a lot of time on deployment. I was stationed in Guam for 3 years, and a lot of you probably don't even know where that is. I didn't before I was stationed there, you know. It's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It's about 3,000 miles west of Hawaii, literally in the middle of nowhere. So I was married at the time, and when I was there, you know, I had like a little family life, a couple of dogs, a wife, you know, like a little house and all that. And then I'd go on deployment, and I was out with the guys, and we drank. You know, like that's what you did. You like worked really hard, you worked long hours, and then we'd go out and we'd go drinking, and we'd go drinking every night. And I just thought that's what people did. You know, I drank a lot. And I never really considered that I had much of a problem because I was young, and I bounced back really easy, and it was really enjoyable. So why is there a problem with that, right? So that went on, and I had that whole split life thing going on, and I learned how to compartmentalize really well then as well, because I was also in kind of the intelligence branch of the Navy. I had like one of those fancy, security clearances. So I was forced to actually not talk about a lot of things that I did on a daily basis. I had to keep those things secret, and we were trained to like keep the things a secret. Like we weren't even allowed to travel through Eastern Bloc countries until like 7 years after we got out of the military because of the information we carried. So that reinforced my compartmentalizing of things. So you know what happened out of deployment stayed there. You know, even the messy stuff, the times where, you know, like I had to go bail people out of jail, the times I had to be bailed out of jail, the times when I was too drunk to get back to the base. Those all seemed like normal things because everybody around me did it. So I didn't think much of it, you know, and then I got out of the service around 25, and I went to college, and I was working full-time, going to school full-time. I didn't really have time for drinking. So I'm like, yeah, I wasn't, you know, that wasn't a problem, you know. I didn't really drink for like the next 4 years. So then what happened was I stopped going to school, I got divorced, and I started working in the restaurant industry. Started working as a bartender. Actually, I first started working as a DJ. It was kind of fun. I wasn't a very good DJ, by the way. I played like really crappy music, and I couldn't mix at all. You know, I wasn't like that guy. I was that guy that was like, didn't put the next song on. But I had a talent for bartending, and I'm a super social guy, so I got like involved in that. And the Navy was a little bit like this, but bartending was the first place that I ever really felt like I fit in. Like, I felt like I had arrived. I got there, and I was like, you know, I was liked. I was giving you drinks, and people liked me for that, you know? And, you know, you show me a little attention, I'd make your drink a little stronger. You show me a little more attention, I might give you a free shot. You know, you do a couple free shots with me, I might make out with you in the bathroom. It's kind of like how that's how my like mind went, right?
Yeah.
And that was great. It actually was really fun. And I really felt like I belonged. I bartended in a small city in Connecticut, in Hartford. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. If you're not, it's okay. You're not missing anything. But it was a small city, so like a lot of us knew in the business knew each other. So we traveled around each other's bars when we weren't working. We drank in other people's places. And that was really fun. You know, it was a really fun deal. You know, and I did that. And I did that, and I kind of quickly got sick of being in such a small place. And I kept dreaming about moving to New York City and, you know, something bigger. So I got into this, like, really, like, never really liking where I was mode. And what I didn't realize at the time is that is kind of the center of, like, my affliction, disease, whatever you want to call it. The way my disease manifests itself is dissatisfaction. So for me, like, a good night out would, you know, being with all my friends, going to a really cool place, you know, getting, like excellent service, having whatever I want, and then, you know, like, finishing off with some, you know, after drinking a lot, finish off with some, like, nice top-quality drugs, because I do like the drugs. What I would find is that it was never enough. Like, I was always looking to go to the next place. Like, this is cool, but something else must be better. And that got, like, to be an obsessive thought with me. I just always wanted to be somewhere other than where I was. It just built and built. Somewhere along this way, a little midway into bartending, I came out to my friends. I announced the world that I was gay. You know, started dating men. And I remember the first person I told my friend Yusuf was like, are you sure you're not bisexual? Because you really seem to like girls. You were married, you dated some girls. And I'm like, no, I'm gay, gay, gay. They're like, okay, whatever. And, you know, I was pretty exclusive with dating men for about 7 years. So I think all of my friends started to accept that that's just who I was. But I didn't. And I always had this kind of nagging feeling that that's not, like, all that I was. But it's difficult. And the part that's difficult about that is I felt a lot of self-judgment about not being able to be one thing or another. Like, I finally crossed the line into being something that was difficult, not well socially accepted, something my parents didn't accept, something I lost, like, my best friend over. I finally crossed into that, and then that wasn't enough for me. So that really worked on my mind a lot. Like, it really, like, worked, it, like, inside my mind, like an earworm just constantly going around inside there. But, like, I just wasn't good enough because I couldn't make up my mind. You know, something was wrong with me, and there was, like, I don't know, what am I? And I was really confused. And somewhere along the way, I just started seeing, like, a couple of women here and there. And my friends all got, like, really confused. They're like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. You know. But the other thing, too, is I got sick of being from a small place. You know, I got sick of being from a small place. And everybody around me did the same thing all the time. And nothing ever changed. So I decided that I had to leave Connecticut. You know, that, like, Hartford was the answer. It was just too small for me. I needed to go somewhere else. I traveled through Europe for like 3 months, and I just wanted to be there, but, you know, I couldn't figure out a way to actually get there and support myself. So I came up with this idea while I was living on Martha's Vineyard for the summer that I was going to move to Hawaii. That was going to, like, solve all my problems, you know. And, you know, I don't know, I think I had this kind of adolescent dream of, like, moving to Hawaii and becoming, like, a surfer and, like, living on the beach. You know, in the meantime, I was dating this really young professional, semi-professional figure skater, and we had this, like, really just, it was, I mean, I think I was 40 at the time, and she was 24. We had this really, like, fiery relationship, and it just didn't end well. She got pregnant. She's from here, from California. She ran back to California because she was scared. She got some really bad advice from some doctors and ended up having to terminate the pregnancy. And that was about all I needed. That 3,000 miles and that relationship being so rough and me feeling super powerless from, like, halfway across the country to have any effect on that. really kind of did me in, and I kind of went off the deep end there. I just drank and drank, and I just used as much drugs as I could, and I think at that point, I wasn't suicidal, but I definitely didn't have much will to live, you know? And I kind of figured if I just kind of lost myself in the booze and drugs, that would, I don't know, work itself out, you know? And I'm not even sure, like, what that looks like. I just kind of tried to stay numb for a while. And when that was all over, you know, when I kind of poked my head up and breathed some air from that, I was like, I need a change in my life. You know, it's funny, a couple years before that, I had seen a therapist because I really was feeling bad about my drug use. I mean, just couldn't get it under control. I don't think I had a drinking problem. But I'm talking to this therapist, and she's like, you know, you say you're really depressed. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really depressed. She's like, well, you know, you might want to check out going to AA. I'm like, I told you I have a drug problem. Like, let's stay on topic here. I was serious. Like, I had no idea. And she's like, well, you're not going to stop being depressed if you don't stop treating your depression with a depressant. And I'm like, I don't understand what that means. She's like, alcohol is depressing. Like, I really, like, that's how naive I was. I'm like, I don't really get that. I'm like, drinking's not the problem, it's drugs. She's like, no, alcohol is a depressant. You keep adding a depressant to a depressive personality, it's just never going to stop. And I'm like, you're stupid. Yeah. So, I just kind of abandoned my place. I had this beautiful apartment, all kinds of crazy stuff. I loved where I lived. I just didn't love the city it was in. And I kind of sold a couple of things and got enough money together, packed, hammered drunk, and moved to Hawaii. I'm not even kidding. Drank 2 bottles of Grand Marnier with my tattoo artist the night I was packing. Barely show up for my plane. Like, left in a blizzard. And when I got to Hawaii, it was like all kind of like Christmas. Like, what was in my bag? I didn't know. You know, I'm like, whoa, yeah, cool. Like a sweater. Not really good here. I'm like, board shorts. Yeah, I got one thing right. Cool. You know, the strange thing about, like, picking up and moving, it actually worked for a while. Moving to Hawaii actually worked for me for a lot of while. Like, fresh spot, sunshine, warm water, you know, like, learning how to surf. 6 months in, I got this spot in a really great beach house, this run-down little beach house with 5 surfers that I knew. And once again, I felt like I had arrived. I had, like, a little, you know, little brotherhood around me. And I was totally back in the closet because I was so afraid of being judged. And, you know, the water is, like, kind of a big thing there. They're very territorial in Hawaii of their waves and all that. And I didn't want to be known as that mahu guy in the water. So I was dating women at the time anyway, so I just kind of ignored the fact that I wasn't straight. Didn't really mention it. Didn't come up all the time. Didn't come up ever all that much. I only lied to one person about it. Girl I was seeing. Just one. You know, the kind of like change of lifestyle worked for a while. And I quit smoking cigarettes. I'm like, I'm doing great. I learned how to surf. You know, I'm kind of like living this great life. And then about 2 years into that, I started dating this girl who really liked to party. Started doing cocaine again. Stopped surfing. And about a year and a half into that relationship, I couldn't get out of my bedroom, you know? I had moved the small refrigerator I bought for our lanai into my closet in my bedroom so that at, say, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, when I needed another beer, I could just reach out from my bed, open the door, pull a beer into my bed, and drink it, and go back to sleep. And, I didn't want anybody to see me like this, so I spent a lot of time in the bedroom in that beach house. And, I don't know, there's not really a worse thing than being, like, cracked out in Hawaii. I mean, it's terrible. It's funny, yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's, like, a beautiful place. It's, like, kind of the place where you want to be outside. There's sunshine, it's beautiful, the water's great. Living right on the beach, and I can't leave my bedroom. you know, because I'm too fucked up. And, you know, all I can do is maybe manage a meal every couple of days and, you know, get out to buy some more booze. And, I don't know, I started really thinking that that was it for me. I'm like, I started getting this idea in my head that I was never going to get any better. Because at this point, I'm like 44, 43. And I'm thinking that's it. You know, I'm thinking, I'm just never going to beat this. You know, I really felt like it had me. Like, I didn't feel like I had a chance. And, you know, that feeling, it's just no good to live with. I kind of feel like I dragged along that bottom for a good 10 years, you know. And although I never lost a job, you know, I never got a DUI, I never got kicked out of an apartment. I didn't even get kicked out of a bar, to be honest. That bottom was like just, for me, it was the scraping along the bottom for all those years that really, really did me in. And I was really over it, you know. I was just over it. I didn't want to live like that anymore. And I didn't know how to change. So a friend of mine that I was bartending with, he says, "I got just a thing for you." And I'm like, "All right, I'll try anything at this point." And so we did this workout thing called P90X, which I thoroughly recommend. I weighed 232 pounds when I did it. I came out 52 pounds leaner after 90 days. I didn't drink for 3 months. I didn't even eat a French fry or a chip for 3 months. Nothing. And somewhere along that way, I got pretty clear-headed. About 2 months into it, I got really clear-headed. I thought, I can't stay here. Because I know too many people. There's too many co-conspirators. Every time I want to go out, it's just going to be to a bar. I'm just going to end up doing drugs in, like, no time flat. You know, I'm going to be right back here, like, where I was miserable. And I started feeling pretty good. So I'm like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave Hawaii. I'm going to move back to the mainland. And I'll give drinking one more try. One more try. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll do something real serious about it. But I thought it was just like kind of the company that I kept. You know, I didn't really realize the problem was me. I mean, I guess I did. I realized the problem was me, but I thought, well, maybe if I don't know anybody, it won't be as easy to, you know, score drugs, and it won't be like as easy to go out every night, and I won't get hooked up with free drinks, I won't be able to drink as much, you know, all these thoughts are running through my head. I'm like, I just need a fresh change of scenery, you know? Think of like what Hawaii did for me. So I moved to San Francisco. And 2 months in San Francisco, I'm in my room, shitty bottle of mezcal, cheap, shitty Coke, can't leave the room. 2 months. Exactly. And I just like, I don't know how I knew. I just knew I had to like give AA a try. Because AA is free, right? At this point, I'm broke. Like, I spent all my money leaving Hawaii, moving to San Francisco. I got laid off from a job that I got working down by the ballpark, waiting tables. Never been laid off. I'm like, "You're sure you're not fired?" They're like, "No, we're laying you off." I'm like, "All right, I'm going to go to unemployment." They're like, "Here's your slip. You can go right to unemployment." I'm like, "Okay, it's a little weird." Okay, so I went to unemployment, got unemployment, and I went to AA. You know, I remember that first AA meeting. I went to an AA meeting in the Castro. I remember that first meeting. I went to a meeting, and when I walked in, this real nice guy was like, saw that I was kind of scared. He's like, "Do you want me to get you a seat?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that'd be cool." So he walks me, and he sits me right about where JoJo is there. You know, there at the kind of the end. He says, "You can stay right here." I'm like, "All right." So he walks away, and I looked around the room, and I actually calculated how many steps it would be to get out. I was like, "Okay, it's 10 steps to that door. It's 14 steps to that door. If that door's closed, I can get out. Like, you know, 2 seconds, no one would see me. I'm in the back room. I could sneak out." And I was, like, terrified. And what I was even more terrified of than the whole, like, admitting I was an alcoholic and all of that, is that everyone in the room was, like, laughing and smiling and, like, hugging each other and, like, knew each other. And I was like, this is really fucking weird. This is really strange. I didn't have the immediate thought that it was a cult, but I thought it was a little weird. I'm like, these guys are all a little bit happy to be sober. This is not what I expected. So I was a little suspicious. And it was a meeting like this, like they went around the room and you had to introduce yourself. And I couldn't even really say my name that I was an alcoholic. I barely could get out that I was freaked. That's it. That's all I said. That was tough. I heard a speaker, good looking guy, like really had his stuff together. It really made sense. And he talked a lot about some of the same things that I had faced. And he just seemed like really well put together, you know. He seemed like he had a lot, and his eyes were bright and shiny, and he like looked people right in the eye when he talked, and I was kind of impressed, you know. I was like, this isn't what I expected at all. But then on the ride home, I remember like, man, I think I cried the whole ride home. I'm riding my bike through the mission, hoping nobody's seeing me crying. I'm not really a crier. And I just kind of knew. I knew that I just couldn't keep drinking the way I was, and that if I didn't get some help, like it was all over for me. I didn't really feel like I was gonna like die like a quick death. I felt like I was gonna go out like a slow, painful, like just get worse and worse, get like agoraphobic. You know, blew up to a huge weight, and like just completely, I don't know, very miserable. You know, I felt like I was just going to be super miserable the whole time. And I didn't want that. So I came back, you know. I went to a meeting the next day. And at the second meeting, I got like a sponsor immediately, because that's what they talked about at the first two meetings. And that guy worked out for me for a little while, for a couple months, but ultimately, I changed sponsors in a little bit, but I was unemployed, and you know, it worked out so that I made just enough money to afford the room in the apartment that I was in, and to be able to eat like very reasonably, and I could manage. So I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm state sponsored, you know, and like, why not get sober? So I just, I went to a lot of meetings. I went to a meeting every day. Some days I went to two because I didn't really have anything else to do. And I didn't know what to do with myself, you know. I kind of wanted to, like, try out a fancy rehab or something like that, but I couldn't afford it. And I didn't know there was free ones. And no one told me there was free ones, so. I just kept showing up, you know, and I kept going to the same meetings every week, and eventually people started talking to me, you know. I started, like, getting to know people. And then, you know, I kept going long enough where you know, like, some of the service commitments came up, and I got, like, a service commitment at a couple of meetings. And I started feeling a little better, you know. But I had this issue that I didn't want to work in the bar business anymore. I was really afraid to go back to working in a bar. I had been a bartender for 20 years at this point, and I was scared. I was like, I don't know if I can do it, you know? I mean, I don't know if I can be in a bar and serve people drinks and stay sober. You know, I was really worried. And at the time, I changed to my second sponsor, Teresa, who I still kind of have. And she's like, you know, she's like, if that's what you have to do, that's just what you have to do. Like, I really tried. I looked really hard for work for about a good 4 months. After about 2 months of, you know, going to meetings, I started looking for a job real seriously, and I couldn't get anything. I remember I applied for this job at Byright Delicatessen, or Byright, the little grocery store it's in the Mission. And I said to the guy, I said, I will work as an unpaid intern until my unemployment runs out, which is like 3 months. And he's like, that's a great offer, dude, but I need somebody who can do the job. And I was like, whoa. Okay, serious. I'm like, You are aware this is a deli, right? That didn't go over that well. That's kind of where the conversation stops. But, you know, I really tried. I tried, and I couldn't find anything. So I had some friends from the East Coast that were living out in San Francisco, and I called them up and said, hey, I need a job. My unemployment's going to run out, and I got to work, you know. So I got a job at kind of a fine dining place, RN74, down on the, you know, down the lower end of Soma. And it was all right. It actually was all right. It wasn't as bad as I thought. And I worked really closely with my sponsor about what I was going to do in different situations. And we worked out of the Living Sober book because, believe it or not, there's a lot of practical information in that old 70s written book. I mean, it's written kind of corny and all, but there's like real practical tips about what to do when you're faced with situations and what people who are sober have done. And, you know, I was still pretty desperate. I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to go back to that miserable life. I was starting to feel better. I was starting to earn money. I was starting to, like, make friends. And I was starting to feel a little like I belonged. And I'm like, I don't want to blow this. So I was willing to actually do what some of those corny suggestions were. And believe it or not, lo and behold, they actually worked. And a lot of the times when I, like, came up against situations that I didn't know what to do, I can't really explain it any other way than sometimes it seemed kind of almost miraculous. I would open up that book, and there would be, like, the exact situation that I faced and how they had dealt with it, how the people had gone through it. I remember this one time, I got out of restaurants eventually, and I started working for Whole Foods as a beer and wine buyer. Not the best sober job, but I didn't have to actually do anything to jeopardize my sobriety, and I had a lot of knowledge. So I was, you know, I got hired into that, but I was new at this store, and they were going on the management group, like the team leaders and the store team leadership was all going on kind of like a retreat thing up to Santa Barbara, going wine tasting, and they want to take the new wine guy along with them, and I'm like, fuck. I'm like, first of all, I'm going to be found out I was being sober. I didn't tell anybody I was sober. I didn't mention that when I was getting a job as a buyer, that they would ruin my chances. And they're just, you know, totally, like, fire me. I'm done. And I'm like, you know, I staked a lot to take this pay cut and get out of the restaurant business into this job. And I'm like, they're going to notice that I'm not drinking. So I'm on the phone with my sponsor, and I'm like, Teresa, I'm freaking out. She's like, what are you freaking out about? I'm like, I have to go to this wine tasting thing, and I got to tell people about wine because I'm the wine guy. She's like, okay, can you do that? I'm like, well, they're going to notice I'm not drinking. She's like, why? I'm like, I don't know, because they're going to watch me. That's what people do. That's what I do. I watch people. I watch how people drink. That's what everybody did. So she's like, all right, come on over. Let's go over this. And we actually, like, read a Living Sober book. And there's a section where it talks about how other people don't really care about what you drink. And I was like, really? Other people don't care about what I drink. That sounds suspicious. All right, I'll go with it. So we went to the wine tasting, and you know, like, we go to all these, like, wineries in Santa Barbara, and they're talking about the Pinot Noir, and everyone looks at me, and I'm like, yeah, it's a, yeah, it smells like a really great Pinot Noir. Is, oh, yeah. I'd say, what is it? Got to have been about 2 years on the barrel. And the guy's like, yeah, of course it has. Like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, yeah. And then, you know, so I don't know. I managed to get through all that. I'm totally afraid. I'm sweating. But it goes all right. And then we go out to lunch at the, what's that restaurant? The one that's in Sideways, the Hitching Post. And, like, we order these big steaks, and they come around, they're taking everybody's drink order, and they come to me, and I'm like, I think this, like, big spotlight's on me, and I'm like, I'll take a Coke. And, you know, they just go to the next person, and no one stops. The record player doesn't screech to a halt. There's not a bright white spotlight on me. I'm not like single out, Mr. Jeffrey Tokars, you are known as a sober guy. That totally didn't happen. Like, no one even cared. No one commented on it. No one noticed. The person next to me is like, oh yeah, Coke sounds great. I'll have a Coke too. He swear to God. And I was like, that was all up here. I totally made all that up. And that was really great. I mean, that really helped me out a lot, you know. All right, so what I didn't, like, kind of skipped over a little bit. So you can,
got 5 minutes.
Got 5 minutes. Five. What I skipped over a little bit is I moved around a little bit in sobriety, and that was a little scary, too. I decided after about a year in San Francisco that it just wasn't warm enough for me. Hey, well, I mean, you moved from Hawaii, you know? So after about a year being sober, I waited till I was a year sober because you're not supposed to move your first year or date anyone. I didn't date anyone for a couple years. And I moved down to Santa Monica. And that was a little scary. It was a little hard getting reconnected with AA. But I did. I just, I stopped going. So, like, I started, like, not going to too many meetings. Like, I went to, like, one or two, and then I didn't go for a couple of weeks, and I started feeling really shitty. And I'm talking to my sponsor, like, I don't know why I feel really shitty. She's like, when's the last time you went to a meeting? I'm like, a couple of weeks. She's like, go to a meeting. I'm like, all right, but they're weird here. They do things different. They clap all the time, and they're, like, really strange. They have cakes. They sing happy birthday, and they have, like, cakes, and people share when it's their birthday, like, forever. It's true, they do. And I forget to mention that I moved to LA as a total LA hater. Yeah, not smart. But I just started going to meetings, and I took a commitment at a meeting at the beach, a Chips and Dips meeting on Sunday on Venice Beach. Took a meeting commitment as a greeter, and there was like 200-300 people at this meeting every week. So I started like getting to know people, and they started suggesting other meetings. I started going to other meetings. And then I started going to some LGBT meetings. Because, you know, the truth is, I felt like I was kind of not being honest to myself about who I was. That I need to, like, be with people who have gone through some of the same stuff I had. And I need to be able to talk openly about how I felt. And some of that stuff was really triggering for me. Some of the stuff around, you know, my kind of lack of a sexual preference, it's really been triggering for me. And I found that I was able to talk about it in meetings, you know, talk about how I felt and how I felt judged and how I felt like I was judging myself. And even when I wasn't being judged, I felt sometimes uncomfortable. And then I started the meeting, this girl I was dating, I started the meeting for bisexuals in recovery. And it went pretty well. We had like a group of maybe like 15, 20 people that came. And we kind of moved around between people's places, and that went really well. It's pretty cool. And it was pretty good, but after a couple of years in LA, I just decided LA wasn't really my scene. I mean, I left LA feeling like a complete different feeling for it. I actually love LA now. I got over that whole hating thing. And I moved back up here because there was an opportunity at Whole Foods in Berkeley. And I needed another change of pace. But this time, for once, I moved with a job, you know, with the support of AA. I already knew people up here. I stayed with my buddy that's in San Francisco, my buddy Mark in San Francisco. And I got, like, dialed in, like, pretty much right away. I started going to meetings right away. I talked to people in San Francisco, because I was staying in San Francisco and working out in Berkeley, about what were the good meetings out in East Bay. I found really good meetings out in East Bay, and it was a lot easier. You know, like, AA became kind of like a little support network for me. And I got to say, like, I'm super grateful for that. Because that's the first time I've ever moved where I haven't had that, like, nauseating feeling in my gut, like, am I going to make it? You know, like, am I going to get the job? Am I going to be a big mess? Am I going to, like, what's going to happen? And I didn't have any of that. Like, I didn't really have a lot of that fear. You know, I go back and forth with that fear thing. Like, a lot of times I'm afraid of a lot of stuff, you know, and I have to like really work closely with fear and be careful not to let fear be too much control over my life. So going to meetings, sharing, working with other people, that really works for me. That really helps. And that's all stuff that I learned in the first couple of meetings that I went to. And that really hasn't changed since, for me. You know, I try to go to a good amount of meetings. I try and stay connected. I try to work with other people. And I really just try to stay, something I heard in San Francisco when I got sober, I try to stay right-sized. You know, I try to not be the big shot anymore, because I don't need to be. You know, there's something in one of the readings that says, you know, that we don't need to be specially distinguished amongst our peers. And for me, thank God, because, like, for me, I always wanted more. I always thought that I needed more. I needed to achieve more, be more, to be recognized and to be something in this life. The truth is, I don't need to be. I just need to be me. That's it. Whatever that is for that day. I can be happy. I can be sad. I can be frustrated. I can be whatever. And that's okay, because those feelings are going to change. Tomorrow's going to be another day, and I'm going to feel completely different. And, you know, I learned a lot about being present, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you very much.
All right.
Are there any AA-related announcements?